Welcome to another episode of PMCA Research Chat. On this episode of Cannabis in Confections and Snacks series, we will be discussing cannabis-infused products, infusion options, and manufacturing challenges. With me today is Peggy Moore of Love's Oven, LLC. Peggy is the majority owner and chief executive officer of Love's Oven, a medical and retail marijuana-infused products manufacturer located in Denver, with distribution to 400-plus locations throughout the state. She has also served as board chair for the Colorado Cannabis Manufacturers Association and participates in various state and local industry work groups. Love's Oven was founded in 2009, and Peggy joined the team as an investor advisor in 2011. In May of 2014, after an illustrious career of 33 years in the highly regulated health insurance industry with United Health Group, Peggy retired. While there, she held two primary positions. Her initial position, Peggy managed claim and customer service operations for 17 years. She subsequently became director of operations, where for 15 years she held post-merger acquisition operational integration projects. One accomplishment in the cannabis industry that Peggy is most proud of is being one of the first manufacturers in the industry to build the Love's Oven infused products manufacturing facility in Colorado to fully FDA compliance ahead of the federal regulation. On today's episode, we'll be talking about cannabis edibles infusion methods, how infusion concentrates are created, and how to determine what infusion method works best for various edibles. In addition, we'll examine efficacy for the various infusion methods, manufacturing challenges, and what the future holds for cannabis-infused edibles. Thank you, Peggy, for joining us today. Have I missed anything? Anything you want to add before we dive in?
Hi, Eric. No, I don't think you've missed anything, and thank you for the lovely introduction.
Sure. Can you explain what infusion THC concentrate options are? You referenced seven. I'm assuming these are the canna butter, canna oil products?
Correct. So there are kind of two classes of infusions these days. You have solventless concentrates, and you also have concentrates that are made through extracting THC through the use of some sort of solvent. So butane, propane, some mixture of that. CO2 is another example of that. So let's talk about canna butter, first of all. This is something that's really near and dear to my heart because in our baked goods, we primarily use straight solventless canna butter extraction. So canna butter is made in our facility by taking the actual plant matter and heat extracting THC from that plant matter through the use of butter. So we essentially heat up the plant material, we heat up the butter and combine the two and then extract the plant material from the butter. So that would be a very clean example of a solventless canna butter.
That's what I was going to ask with regard to, do you get any flack as far as solvents? I know we get some from time to time with regard to like lecithin or something like that and hexane extraction.
Well, it's interesting. I think you've got two types of consumers, those who care about the type of extraction or concentrate that's being used and those that really only care about what effect that they're going to get from the product. But I think more and more as the general public becomes educated on cannabis and how things work, consumers are really moving over to that solventless side of things.
How efficient is that? I mean, what kind of, when I ask a question like that, I'm like, what kind of percentage is left? Can you get a good percentage of the THC out?
Yes. So these numbers may not be meaningful, but we get almost 80% of the THC out using that solventless canna butter method.
Wow.
Our kind of secret weapon is we actually use the keef from the plant material versus the whole plant to the extraction. So keef is a little pretty sparkly things that really hold most of the THC in a plant. And there's a process called keefing that uses dry ice, and we take that keef and that's what we mix with the butter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, let's talk about oil for a minute. So really for a long time, the primary method of infusion or creating a concentrate was oil. And in that process, you're typically using, again, a solvent to extract the THC from the whole plant material itself. And I talked about it, that could be CO2, that could be ethanol, that could be butane, propane, a mixture of the two. But you have these solvent-based can of oil products, as you mentioned. Those can work in virtually any type of product, so that they can work in a baked good, for example. You would ideally take that can of oil and mix it with butter, because the fat with the butter is really what activates the THC in baked goods.
Right.
Now, there's several new solventless options out there as well. So there's a product called rosin. And rosin is created through pressure on the plant material, and you're left with a very solventless item that you can use to infuse. So rosin has really become very popular in Colorado lately, the most mature adult use market in the country, and the consumers are rapidly, you know, learning what it is and what it isn't in terms of what's in their cannabis products. So they like that. Another relatively newer form of concentrate is what's called live resin. And that takes the plant that has been fresh frozen, and we extract the concentrate from that fresh frozen plant. And that creates this live resin product.
I'm comparing it in my head to the chocolate industry. It sounds a lot like pressing cocoa in the cocoa powder process, where we literally just press it. The most efficient we could do is probably 22% fat left in the cocoa powder, maybe 10, 12, maybe 10%, but that's really pushing it.
Yeah, very similar process.
So how do you test for the concentrates? I mean, I'm curious how you test these when you say there's a process for concentrate testing, and then we'll get into functionality, I guess.
So the first thing when you're thinking about making an edible product is you need to understand the potency of the concentrate that you're using. So that's really what informs you in terms of how much of your cannabis butter, THC oil, rosin, et cetera, you're going to put in a batch. So we do have certified labs in Colorado, and we send the concentrate out for potency testing. And yeah, I'm sure you do some things that are similar within chocolate, but we're testing, again, first for potency so that we know how much to dose. And then once products are made, we actually have them tested again. And at that point, we're not just testing for potency. We're doing that again. But at that point, we're also testing for microbials, for heavy metals, a whole array of things that you wouldn't want in your cannabis.
And it also gives you some idea of consistency of your, not just concentrate, but dosing process for standardization.
Exactly. So homogeneity is another one of those things that are tested on the finished products.
So the butter, the oil, the resin, I'm assuming those are each, somebody's going to pick that based on their application. I'm assuming the butter is probably the least concentrated, and the resin being the most, but probably needs, if you're using, say, a fat-based application, you're probably going to need to mix it with something to get it in there efficiently.
So, you know, it really does depend on the individual product and then your preference as a manufacturer in terms of what concentrate works best with your products. For us, we do both baked goods as well as chocolates. And with our baked goods, we use the solventless cannabis butter. With our chocolates, we choose to use an oil, although we are experimenting with doing some solventless rosin in our chocolates. But you want to really think about kind of the delivery mechanism for the THC efficacy when you're thinking about what concentrate you want to use in your product. So for example, because baked goods have a high degree of fat, that cannabis butter works really, really well in baked goods. Chocolates, of course, you have some butter fat, right? But really, the cleaner choice for chocolate is an oil. It's going to match more easily, and you're going to be able to disperse the concentrate throughout the product very efficiently.
So when you make the cannabis butter, would cocoa butter be your vessel, so to speak, for that? Or do you have some other kind of fat you use that's across the board effective?
Yeah, sure. So we use ghee, actually. So clarified butter.
Clarified butter, right.
Yep. So that's what we use with our cannabis butter.
And you put that into the chocolate without any issues as far as, I don't want your percentages and it's none of our business, but I mean, from a chocolate perspective, does that mess with your crystallization when you're tempering it all?
We're not using cannabis butter in our chocolates.
Oh, you're using the oils.
So with the oils, you essentially heat them up because you're also heating up your chocolate to melt it. They mix very well together.
Beautiful. What's a cost look like across the board for, say, the butter versus the oil versus the resin? And again, I'm assuming it's going to be due to the concentration of each of those particular products.
It is, for sure. And really what drives those, the biggest part of those costs is the cost of the plant material itself.
Right.
But on average, it costs us about 6 cents per milligram for our concentrates. So a 100 milligram product, which we have many of those in Colorado, and we produce many of those, is going to cost you about 60 cents per product, regardless of whether we're using produced in-house canna butter or purchased oil or some other concentrate.
I didn't think it would be that low. I thought it would be more expensive than that.
Yeah, it was more expensive. I would say there was a day not too long ago where we were paying $1.50 a milligram.
Wow.
But the cost of plant material has really come down in Colorado and in many other markets across the U.S.
You must have quite an operation doing the bakery and the confectionery angles. Can you get into any of the manufacturing challenges of each of those?
Well, sure. It's a balancing act for sure. We have about a 2,000 square foot kitchen that is part of a larger 8,500 square foot facility. But both the baking and the chocolate and confectionery work go on within the same space. So manufacturing challenges, of course, on the chocolate side is you want to make sure that, you know, the temperatures are correct to be able to produce chocolate. That's a little less important when it comes to baking. But if you attempt to do some baking in the same room that you're doing some chocolates, you can encounter issues with.
Yes, I know. I know. Yeah, being in technical services, I've got a ton of horror stories about going into bakeries, and you know, I've been in situations where they're actually enrobing with a compound coating the product they literally just took out of the oven and wondering why it doesn't cool properly.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a couple of examples of challenges. We're in a unique situation with our building. Our building was built in the 1940s and everything has been retrofitted in terms of heating and cooling. And ideally, of course, you want to be in a perfectly temperature controlled environment for chocolate. So,
yep. Do you lose any efficacy in your baking operation? I mean, that's a question I've never asked, but I'm always curious about. I'm assuming you're using the butter to replace part of the shortening in the formulation, as opposed to molding, say, a chip and using that. But do you lose any efficacy when heat's applied?
I would say no. And we do replace a very small amount of the shortening or the fat in the baked goods products with the canna butter. But literally, it can be just as small as, you know, a quarter of a cup for, you know, 900 packages of products. I mean, we really have a highly, highly concentrated can of butter. But we are looking for a different efficacy in those baked goods using the can of butter, because the can of butter is processed through your liver, and it does give you a different effect than using an oil and a chocolate, for example. The consumer will typically find that baked goods are more effective for sleep.
Because it takes longer and it's more stretched out.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, it's really been a winner for us on the baked goods side.
Do you do any marketed products that are, how do I put this? Say the target is sleep. Do you put any other products in them, any additional effectives, or is it strictly cannabis?
No, we do use some other minor cannabinoids for sleep. The cannabinoid that seems to be the most effective is CBN. We purchase a CBN isolate that's been tested and use that in a chocolate bar, as a matter of fact. So we have a milk chocolate bar that is both fast acting, so onset within 5 to 15 minutes, and then also promotes sleep. And so that's what we call a 1-to-1-to-1 chocolate bar. So that you have your THC, you have your CBN, and you have your fast acting product.
How do you test the efficacy of the product? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a bit complicated for sure. So the state tells us we cannot taste anything.
Understood.
In our production facility. So what happens is through the R&D process, we will produce the product. We will have it sent to a lab for final testing. We will receive that product back. We will sell it to a dispensary partner, and we will go in and then purchase that legally, of course, as adults over 21.
So there's no like cool focus groups or anything like that.
The focus groups are typically our employees and their families.
Ah.
Yeah. And so as you might imagine, folks are that work in the industry are pretty familiar with cannabis and the various effects. We also will use dispensary partners to do some taste and feedback.
I found that in the bourbon industry as well. You know, if it's a particular brand, you're not going to find it because all the employees are going out buying it.
Right. So it's definitely a little tricky to be able to get through that process, especially because you have to send the product out to be tested for potency and all the things I mentioned earlier.
Right.
And so it can get a little expensive if you don't get it right the first time.
Is it easy to quantify? Okay, so you send it out, you get it tested for potency, et cetera. Can you quantify based on those results where you are in the grand scale of things to reaction, or do you still need to do product testing?
Well, let me make sure I understand your question. So when we send the product out, get it tested, bring it back, able to judge right then, you know, do we have the THC correct? Of course,
where you need to be. Right.
In terms of the efficacy, that's really a matter of, you know, people actually trying the product and documenting their specific results.
So you've got kind of a baseline, and then after that point, it's based on body composition, I suppose.
It really is. And every one of our bodies are different, and we all process cannabis a little bit differently.
How do you manage technical issues in your production situation? Do you have internal resources? Do you have consultants? The reason I ask this, I know some of the, for instance, chocolate suppliers will not help with particular technical issues. We prefer to that you use a consultant. Am I being as diplomatic as I can be here?
I think you really are. And, you know, unfortunately, we encounter that just not with, you know, chocolate consultants, but there's many of your mainstream resources are hesitant to help with cannabis-related products. So I do have a corporate chef and, you know, culinary school trained and, you know, a lot of experience. And now she's had this year 10 years experience in cannabis. So she's
really shout out. Give her a shout out.
Yeah, her name is Hope Fromm, and she's just wonderful. So yeah, Google her, Hope Fromm. She's done a lot of amazing work in the cannabis industry. But so she's our first go-to, but we have developed a network of people that we can go to with technical issues. One of our first lines of defense is our labs. So these labs see all different types of products in various stages of R&D and as well as in production. And they often are the go-to for us when we're not getting exactly the THC potency that we're looking for, if we're seeing heavy metals, things like that. So we'll use them heavily. And then we also will use consultants, but we actually do consulting ourselves. So that's kind of our last line is to use consultants. But if we need something that is very specific, and I'll give you an example, we don't do gummies. And I would say 95% of the manufacturers out there do gummies. We're looking at bringing on a gummy type of product, but we don't think we have the internal expertise to do that. So in that case, we'll use a consultant.
Okay. Question about shelf life testing. From a chocolate perspective, I know baked goods, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. I mean, you got bigger issues that aren't necessarily related to this, but fat related with shelf life and chocolate. Do you ever see any issues with blooming or migration or anything like that? Or is the level so low that it's anything that's going to happen is going to be safe from nuts as an inclusion or something like that?
see in the chocolate side of the business is that if we're going to see something happen, we're typically going to see it shortly after production.
Okay.
That's, you know, we'll know right away if we're going to see, you know, sugar bloom or fat bloom.
Right. That's generally what I've found in my experiences too, is, you know, if somebody has some sort of bloom, it's going to happen before it goes out the door, because once it goes out the door, you have no control over what their ambient conditions are, and it's usually atrocious.
It sure is, especially. So, but our chocolate products, we have a 1 year shelf life for those guys, and we've really never had any shelf life issues there. Because on the other hand, as you mentioned, is a whole other animal. But
you know, and I always wonder, I mean, if I can make some kind of a bizarre comparison here, I remember being in a cigar shop in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and they were selling a really big brand name chocolate, Truffles, in a special area, but it was right there. And I always had to wonder, I guess it doesn't matter if you're smoking a cigar and eating chocolate, you're not going to taste much anyway. You're not going to worry about contamination from smoke. But it's just a weird kind of a side story that, you know, you always wonder what goes on in other ambient situations.
Well, for sure. And, you know, once you turn that product over we do some of our own deliveries in Colorado, but we also use courier, go to some of the more far-flung places across the state. And, you know, you really have to trust those couriers that they're going to take good care of the product, and then that it lands at a store that understands how to take care of the products. So
how are the state laws there versus other state regulatory laws? I don't know if you can compare and contrast at all, but we've had some guests on from other areas, and it's interesting to see the differences in the way states look at cannabis.
I would agree with that. It is interesting to see the differences. We went through, pardon my French, hell, when we first became a legal adult use market. So the lawmakers were making the rules, and they didn't understand cannabis, and the cannabis operators, you know, are just freaked out because here's a whole batch of new rules. And so we had many, many rule changes early on. I think Colorado, since about, I would say 2018, we've really minimized the number of rule changes that there have been. I also think that there's many states that are looking at other markets when they are looking to legalize cannabis in their states, which is a good thing. But it's also interesting to me that everybody seems to want to put their own stamp or flavor on the rules. And again, I think that's some of that lawmaker, you know, push versus operator understanding pull. One example that I can give you that really is still kind of a thorn in our sides in Colorado is that in 2018, they implemented a new rule that requires each individual serving of cannabis product, so chocolate piece or the baked goods piece, has to be marked with a THC symbol. So that really created a lot of work for us. Now, chocolates are a little easier with that because you're using, in a bar, for example, you're using a mold, and you can imprint the THC symbol there for a chocolate bar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that shows up pretty good. But baked goods, you really don't have that capability. You can try and do some things in a mold and baked goods, but that's not typically what we do. We actually use an edible ink printer to put a little edible wax-based symbol on each products. Now, to my knowledge, no other state has required that. You know, it's a good example of something that we're doing in Colorado that we're not seeing being done in other states. Now, the reason why they implemented this is we had a group lobby the legislature, and they were concerned that without this mark, somebody was going to accidentally consume something that has cannabis in it. So this was in spite of the fact that you have child-resistant packaging and you have the THC symbol on the front of
the packaging.
and without regard to the fact that the vast majority of accidental cannabis product consumption occurs in the age group 2 and under. And guess what?
Mm-hmm. It's a parental situation. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. What is your packaging situation like? Because it seems to me some states have something similar to, like, if I have a pack of cigarettes at duty-free in Canada, and it's got everything but a picture of cancer on it. Yeah. So there's no confusing it for a child's treat.
Right. Well, I would say we're not quite as restrictive with our packaging here in Colorado. We do have to have a whole huge set of warnings on the packaging. So similar to what you would see American cigarettes to have.
Yep.
Back of the package, you know, it tells you you're going to die, you're going to die, you're going to die. But no, we actually have to put all the safety warnings on there. It does have to be child-resistant packaging. If there's more than one serving, which a serving is defined as something that contains 10 milligrams of cannabis, you have to have child-resistant reclosable bags. So that's a little tricky. That was really something that was more aligned with the pharmaceutical industry. And a lot of work had to be done to really get, you know, cost-effective packaging out there available for mainstream cannabis operators.
Thankfully, it's not that hard plastic if you need a stick of dynamite to open.
Right. To the closures is a little different. So,
from your website, I've noticed you market in other states. Can you do that? Is that what's that look like with regard to working with other regions?
For us, so far, that has been brand licensing.
Okay. You provide some sort of parameters to a manufacturer who manufactures that in their state.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So we provide the recipes and we also support them through training on those recipes. And we provide ongoing support. You know, for example, our partner in Florida purchased a large, this may be familiar to you, Eric, a large Baker Perkins line to manufacture her baked goods. And, you know, it's very different than we have in our little 2,000 square foot kitchen. Yeah. That guy's like, I don't know, 30 feet long or so.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So we had to work with them to make sure that our recipes would continue to work on that new baking line.
So where can people find your brands in other places? I mean, can you talk to that or is that something?
Yeah, our baked goods brand can be found in Florida at the True Leaf stores. And then we are working with a partner in Maryland, and soon our brands will be, both our brands, both our chocolates as well as our baked goods will be available throughout Maryland.
If I can backtrack to the packaging, have you had any incidents or problems with regard to children? We recently talked to someone who was in the Michigan area, and they mentioned that their rules are so strict, so tight. Basically, if a child gets a hold of this product, it's not really going to be their fault because it's so obviously not candy, and it's a parental problem. Have you seen any issues like that in Colorado?
In regards to children, no. And I think, you know, it happens, you know, you have those accidentally, the children get into the product that their parents have left down. It's really regarded as a parental problem when that does happen.
Thank you. Now, my son works for an emergency vet and they get a ton of dogs in there whose owners have left baked goods or other stuff out and the dogs eat them.
Yeah, we actually hear more about that type of incident than we do with the children. Thank God, I guess.
Yeah, they get tolerated better.
Yep.
So what's the future look like for cannabis-infused edibles from your perspective?
I think the future is bright. That we see more and more consumers turning to edibles as their preferred method of consumption because people are, you know, just frankly, they don't want to smoke. So we've continued to see the category really grow, and I think that it will continue to do so as long as we as manufacturers continue to be inventive and creative and really differentiate our products with specific effects. And so I'm really very encouraged about the future of cannabis-infused edibles.
And you have some really great products. So let's talk Love's Oven. You got Her Highness brand. Those are smokables, right?
Those are smokables. What we are focused on with Her Highness, and they have wonderful branding, is we're currently focused on both the smokables, but to a greater degree, their accessories. They really are two very smart women who have great taste, and they're a little edgy, but they have some great accessories, and those are selling very well in Colorado.
I guess you branded with Tommy Chong as well?
We have. Yeah, that partnership will be ending pretty soon. I think I'm okay to say that. They opted to really focus more not on Tommy Chong as an entity or Cheech Marin as an entity, but really merging the Cheech and Chong and getting back to the roots of where those guys were at with their movies and with their branding as Cheech and Chong.
I'm going to guess the majority of our younger audience isn't really familiar with that, but, you know, it's worth a look if you get a chance.
Yeah. And, you know, we hope to be working with the bigger Cheech and Chong brand as they kind of get their act together and get really launched nationwide.
What's really interesting is that's the age bracket that's probably going to be getting into these products at some point.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And we do see, you know, that trend. We see a growth in terms of cannabis consumers that are of that, you know, maybe 50 to 75 year olds.
I was going to say our age bracket.
Yeah. Yes.
Is there anything else you want to plug? I mean, we can put stuff in show notes if you want, but is there anything else you want to plug? This has been a great interview.
Oh, well, I've had so much fun with it. I do have a couple of things to plug.
Sure.
So we actually have a brand licensing agreement with a company that produces a product called Major Beverages. They're out of the Northeast, and they use a specific emulsion process that really gives fast onset with these beverages, and we've just loved our partnership with them. So they have 5 flavors of beverages. They're available in quite a few states, but we're, of course, a manufacturer for them in Colorado. So try those little majors if you have a chance to do so. The other thing I want to plug is fast acting. So Azuka is our fast acting partner. So they produce they developed the nanotechnology to allow us to make almost any cannabis product fast acting. So we have fast acting baked goods as well as chocolates. So
you're kind of encapsulating a resin or something like that for use in a water-based application?
In oil, yes.
Gotcha. This has been a fantastic interview. I'm so happy you joined us today, Peggy.
Oh, thank you, Eric. I've really had fun.